You're listening to Album Swap, a podcast about sharing music with your friends.
What is up? Welcome, episode 11-011. This is Album Swap. I am Fred Dees Jr., and this is my buddy, my good friend, Brian McDonald.
Co-host.
There you go. Yeah, welcome. This is episode 11. We are going to talk music, a little bit of music. We swapped some albums over the last week, and we're going to discuss those. The first album, I guess the one that I gave to you, was Ryan Adams. It was a Ryan Adams album called Heartbreaker. This album, the reason why I gave it to you, I wanted to do a Ryan Adams album. You know, this is now episode 11. We haven't even gotten to Ryan Adams yet, one of North Carolina's most favorite sons. And so I knew I wanted to do Ryan Adams. I also was hanging out with friend, with a special someone, if you will, who's a huge Ryan Adams fan.
That's the real reason behind
exactly,
it.
Yeah. So a little shout out to that special someone, again, with the alliteration. But yeah, so I started looking at Ryan Adams and listening to all his albums again, and Heartbreaker, I think it's his best album, but it also, like, it was, there was a time, and I was like a junior in high school, I think, and this album, at that stage, or at least that stage in my life, I was kind of bouncing around between not the best music. I don't even know what I was listening to, which tells you a lot. And then that album started taking me in a direction that I'm still going in. And it I'm not saying it changed my life.
It's groundbreaking.
Yeah, I'm not saying it saved my life or changed my life, but it definitely saved my musical reputation.
we might not be sitting here today.
We likely would not be sitting here today if it wasn't for Ryan Adams' Heartbreaker coming out when I was in high school. So I swapped that over to you and was very, very happy knowing that you'd probably have listened to it.
I had, and we'll talk a little bit more, but I had not listened to it in a while, so it was very refreshing to revisit.
In an analytical view of it, too, right?
Yeah.
So a little bit, it's different when you listen to it, intentionally taking notes.
Yes. And when I listened to it was when it first came out and before what's transpired since then.
Right.
So, and then I gave you a soul classic, the OJs, Backstabbers.
Mm.
This is an album that I kind of got into, actually, probably a few years before Ryan Adams, but probably about the time that Whiskey Town was playing. And a friend of mine who was getting a lot of free music because he was in a band, it was Jason Patterson of Cry of Love.
Yeah.
At that time, the record companies were sending these guys
episode
tons.
Episode two.
That's right. So anyway, Jason was getting all these albums from and CDs from the record company, and there was two that I latched onto. One, and neither was Backstabbers. One actually was Earth, Wind & Fire's box set. The other was a Rhino selection they had, or a collection they had called In Yo Face.
Okay.
There was like five of them. He had like episode two and three, and some of the OJs was on there, and then that kind of led me to Backstabbers.
So like, hey, what album are these songs on? Boom. Backstabbers, yeah. Gotcha.
But anyway, I kind of picked this for you more so after listening to the Dap Kings on a couple episodes.
Another episode. Episode 4 Sharon and Jones. Episode 8, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
Could be wrong. Maybe the listeners should check
him. That's right. Check him out.
Yeah.
But that soulful sound, just kind of richness of the vocals and all that just really reminded me of like the Backstabbers, and even though they're a little more funky, they still just had that orchestration. That
it's like the definition of soul, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This to
and
me is
like soul always has like layers of funk, but this is and this has that. But yeah, like you said, this is soul. This is the definition of that soul sound.
Yeah, this is a soul classic. So I was happy. I actually kind of was trying to figure out the right time. I like that when I sent this to you. You said, okay, great, we have Backstabbers and Heartbreakers.
Right, yeah. and again, I've mentioned this in other podcasts, but like, we don't plan these albums that we're giving each
other. That's right.
Like, we don't tell.
Surprise.
We don't find out what the other one's giving until we get it. And so, any theme or anything like that is totally organic. Like, we're not...
That's right.
You know, we're not
saving this up for Valentine's Day, doing something hokey that everybody else...
We haven't planned 20 episodes with themes and stuff like that. Even though we did talk about... We should have had, like, a Ryan Adams episode. I think one of the cool things is that we don't have themes. And a lot of this is happening organically. So, Backstabbers and Heartbreakers.
Backstabbers and Heartbreakers, baby.
Episode 11. Watch your back. with that, we're going to take a little break, but just want to remind everybody we're on, you know, whatever podcast platform you like to listen to, we're on it. Google Play, Apple, iTunes, Stitcher, all of them. Check them out. And also on whatever social media you like to use, we're on all of them. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Check us out because we're on it. Love to talk to you and you know, have a conversation off the air. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with a little Backstabbers from the OJs. You're listening to Album Swap, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We are now going to dive into an album by the OJs called Backstabbers, which was, let's see, it came out in 1972. It was really kind of an interesting point with the band's career. So this band, the OJs, is a soul band. They're really known more for like Philadelphia soul. Philadelphia, they kind of defined what Philadelphia soul was in the 70s. But what's interesting is they actually formed in Ohio. I think Canton, Ohio is where they formed. Mm-hmm. And they formed in like the late 80s, I think 1950, I'm sorry, not 80s, but the late 50s, 1958. And so forming kind of in the late 50s, they came into the 60s, which, and this is something we've talked about in a lot of previous podcasts, but during this time, albums weren't really a big thing, right? Like it was more about the hits.
More about the singles, more about the hits.
So they formed in the late 50s, and throughout the 60s, they charted a lot of minor hits, which that basically just means you pay the bills and you probably are touring a lot and not at like the big cool theaters and arenas and stuff. Well, they weren't doing arenas then, but the big venues, you were doing the smaller venues, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, and think about it too, you had segregation and things like that.
Yeah.
So they were probably doing like, you know,
probably doing like the Chitlin circuit, exactly.
And definitely not having as much success as Temptations and some of those other bands.
Absolutely. Didn't have the type of hits, probably didn't have the pipes that the Temptations had. You know, definitely didn't have the backing that the Temptations had.
They weren't like the big Motown band.
Right, exactly. They didn't have the Motown backing. So they were, you know, again, minor hits, never didn't have a hit that hit the U.S. Top 40. But again, successful touring, so they kept it up. Well, in the early 70s, two of the members, so they were a five-piece before, two of the members drop off. About the early 70s, around 71, 72. And the rest of the OJs consider calling it quits, hanging it up. We're gonna end it, go live our lives. But instead, they give it one more shot, and they join up with a producer and songwriting team called Gamble and Huff.
I love that name.
Love it, right? I mean, you couldn't even write that.
It's like a movie title.
It is like a movie title, Gamble and Huff. It's perfect. It's perfect. And Gamble and Huff, I mean, production-wise was great, I'm sure, but the songs that the OJs did after this introduction with Gamble and Huff, or at least like the team happening between all of them, were just amazing. I mean, some like iconic hits.
Yep.
Iconic hits. What's the Sound of Money, The Love of Money?
For the Love of Money.
I mean, that song is bananas popular, right?
Oh, yeah. And it always has been.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I remember it got popular again with The Apprentice television show.
Sure.
It was always something that like you would always kind of crank up because it had that great bass line.
Bom, bom, yeah. Bom. Yeah.
Their vocals are just phenomenal. I think of, not to mock any of the Motown bands, but like for me, that this Philly soul sound that they kind of helped create, their vocals are just outstanding.
Outstanding. No, it really was. It's so cool to think about this band that could never get over the hump. Minor hits. They have now this team and they blow up. They start having hits. They're a big name. And so the first album that they do after meeting Gamble and Huff is the album that we're going to review today, and that's Backstabbers. So it was their first million seller. Really, I mean, it had four singles.
Yep.
Four singles off of it, but I think like five real hits. Sunshine is a track that, yeah. Track number nine, Sunshine, was a kind of a hit, even though it wasn't a single off of the album, like initially. But this album really set them off, and from Backstabbers on, they play, I mean, they're still playing today, and they had a ton of hits through the 70s. They were inducted into the Vocal Group Hall of Fame in 2004, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2005, so a lot of greatness kind of came after Backstabbers. And Backstabbers, again, first million seller, top 10 on the Billboard pop albums, sold over 500,000 within a year of release. It was a gold record, had two of their most successful singles ever, Love Train, which was a number one hit, and was considered by many to be, quote-unquote, the pinnacle of Philly soul.
Yes.
Was this album, Backstabbers. Yeah. Crazy, crazy, crazy important. And, like, instrumental, there's a pun, instrumental and, like, in soul, especially 70 soul, 1970 soul. Rolling Stone even had its number 318 in their greatest 500 albums, whatever the heck.
That you must listen to before you die.
Of course, of course. Well, this one has been listened to.
So, fun fact about the OJs. They were in the Fighting Temptations movie. It came out in 2003.
Yeah, Cooper they were.
Jr. and Queen Bee, Beyonce.
Queen Bey.
I thought that was pretty cool. You know, they've kind of always been in the business. They've been out there touring. I have to say, I've had a couple chances to see them, and I've never seen them, and I kind of wish I would have, just to hear Love Train and Backstabbers and...
Yeah, right.
And for the love of money.
Just for any shred that you can get from it, right? Like, you're not going to get the full experience of what they were.
No,
but
I
just,
get it.
But just to get a little bit, just to get a little taste, you know what I mean?
Just a little taste.
Oh, absolutely.
This was definitely something that I kind of got into probably about, like, 25 years ago. And part of it was from rap, like, listening to a lot of the rap that was coming out of the day when they started getting into James Brown.
Sure.
I started getting into going back and listening to more of James Brown than, say, the hits that I knew. When I saw that History of Funk collection by Rhino, the first track off this album was on there.
Oh, nice.
And so it was something other than For the Love of Money and the hits, right? So it was like a deep track of the OJs.
I was about to say, you start seeing a little more depth.
Yeah, and that kind of cracked the door or the window open a bit, where it was just like, oh my God, you know, this is like even better than this kind of great pop song that they had for years.
Yeah, it's like getting into a box of chocolates and it just keeps getting better.
Yeah, exactly. Then you find that right caramel nougat mix.
So you're a caramel nougat guy, huh?
I'm more of caramel.
Interesting.
But if the right mix of nougat and then peanuts, you know, Snickers.
Yeah, huge Snickers fan. So,
yeah, King candy bars.
Yeah, there we go again. So Backstabbers was the album that kicked it off for the OJs, made them into the somewhat, you know, soul legends that they are. One thing I'll say before we get into the actual tracks, there's such a strong usage of string instruments here.
Yes.
And it is so great. I mean, I was even noticing that I was missing it because they become such an element of the beat and everything that you forget that it's like, oh crap, there's like violins. You completely space on that because of, I don't know, how fluid and smooth this all their sounds are on this album. It's just so pretty, really.
Well, like, especially like on Backstabbers, the song.
Yeah.
The violins bringing it in.
Oh, man, yeah.
The violins and strings kind of set up the whole song right there at the beginning and give it that kind of just really strong, serious tone.
And the thing is, I mean, the name of the album's called Backstabbers. There is a theme. It's not a concept album, but there's a theme. It's supposed to be about, like, watching out for people who say they're your friends, but they're basically going after your girl.
That's right.
They're going, you know, watch out for the Backstabbers, and you notice it, like, just read the titles throughout the album, all about backstabbing. And that's the thing about the strings, like what we're talking about, like one of the it kind of gives that dark kind of, like, you know, watch out, like, you know, back, not just even the song Backstabbers, but throughout it, like, the way they use the strings kind of gives it that dark and not spooky necessarily, but like you don't trust it kind of feeling, you know what I mean? Mistrust kind of feeling. Backstabbers.
Backstabbers.
Yeah.
A little sexy mystery.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so how about we dive into this?
Let's dig into it.
So track one is called When the World's at Peace. Nice little title track, or not title track, but nice little start to the album. It's a funky start, but this
is very funky.
It kind of sounds like the Temptations when they got funky, like Ball of Confusion time. Like, it has that feel, even kind of James Brownish.
Yeah, that's exactly the horns at the beginning to me.
Yeah.
And that's why I was saying, when I heard that, it was like, God, that sounds so much like James Brown, but it's got so much more vocals than just James.
That's a great point, yeah. Oh, it really does. That's a great point. And, yeah, so the overall groove in the song is killer.
The groove's amazing, and I think it is probably the funkiest song in some ways.
Yeah.
With the horns and the beat. And kind of pushed that edge of funk that for so like people like Rufus and Chaka Khan and some of that stuff that started coming out later, and they would, you know, kind of dig into that a little bit more. And I think that's the other reason why when I finally bought this album, and this was the opening track, and then it goes into, you know, Backstabbers, is it was just like, wow, this is such a strong.
Right, because Backstabbers is track two.
Yeah. So it made it like easy to just listen to this thing all the way through.
Absolutely. One more note before we start it. The breakdown at about the 50-second mark around there is like killer.
Yeah.
And it's iconic. It's been sampled before. It is.
Yeah.
It is Dirt McGirt. So we're going to listen to a little bit track number one, When the World's at Peace. Yeah, and I like how they, with their first track, really do a good job of introducing what's probably their strongest asset, that's their vocals. Like,
yeah.
That song, even though, like we said before, like the groove and the instruments are just awesome and super funky, the vocals are what makes it. The way they're layering on those harmonies, like, man, it is some cool stuff. Like, if you listen to that and you don't walk away feeling cooler, you are not cool.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. It's like to me, it is. It's the definition of just kick-ass 70s cool funk.
It really is. Soul, funk, soul. Love it. Love it. Love it. We're going to get down to track number two, title track, Backstabbers. And this is always been one of my favorite songs ever from like listening to oldies when we were kids and stuff. Like, I love Backstabbers because it gives, I mean, they're talking about Backstabbers, and it just feels like somebody's kind of warning you about stuff. You know what I mean? Like, watch out for backstabbers and stuff. Like, it does. The whole song kind of feels like a warning. Love the piano that just drops into the drums and guitar at the start. So, so, so sick. It's a very smooth, like, kind of low-riding groove.
Yeah.
It gives it that dark, kind of smoky, almost like an alley feel. You know what I mean? Definitely like a backstabbing feel, if you will.
Yeah, like a movie, you know, where you're kind of walking down the dark
for
street,
sure.
And all that, and I agree. Like the way the strings kind of set it up, and then the kind of punctuation of the lyrics and the chorus, it is awesome. You know, it's one of those songs like I remember hearing, but I didn't really know it was them again until like started reading more about them and realized that's who it was. It was kind of like one of those kind of lost tracks in the back
cool.
of your memory.
Yeah.
Like you remember hearing it from years ago, but you didn't know who it was or what the reference was.
Right. Boom. It was the OJs.
It's the OJs.
OJs. So we're going to play a little bit of track number two, OJs Backstabbers. This is also the first, I think, single off the album.
Yes.
Title track, Backstabbers.
Title track. We'll be right back. smile in your face.
Oh, man.
All the time trying to take your place.
Trying to take your place.
No. Those backstabbers.
Backstabbers. Yeah. Whew. I tell you what. And you were right. You mentioned when we were listening to that, one of the first kind of run-throughs they do there, his vocals, when he hits that high note, whew, I'll tell you what, that hits you deep.
Yeah.
Deep. Because, yeah, man, he nails the note. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
And we were saying, like, I'm surprised this wasn't used in more movies, like through the 70s and 80s.
It's a perfect song for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah. Or even like Quentin Tarantino. I'm surprised he didn't like have that as like an opening credit to one of his films.
He's not dead yet, so.
True. Yeah. So, by the way, if you do that, yeah,
we came up with it.
We want a taste.
We came up with it. Title track, Backstabbers, track number 2. Love it. Love it.
Yes.
First single. So we'll get down to track number 3, Who Am I? I thought it was interesting that there wasn't like a question mark, so it's not Who Am I, it's Who Am I.
Who Am I.
Yeah. The instruments on this, like, plus the vocals, give it such like a cool, kind of slow and like almost painful intro to it. Like it's really, really nice, but it definitely has like this, yeah, this cool, slow, like a little light painfulness to it.
It's sexy, soulful.
Yeah, strings. Definitely. Like real soul, you know, like but in the sense of pain, not in the sense of like,
yeah,
party soul, right? Yeah. The 140 mark in this, about that mark, there's a breakdown where like the vocals kind of sound like a train. The drums, they stop it. They basically stop the song with like a, there's a like a, not a rattler, but kind of like maracas or something.
Yeah,
I'm not
marimba.
Sure. Yeah, so there's a one of those instruments. Yeah, and they make a little kind of like a shaking sound, and then the bass a little boom boom. Like it is. Yeah. So cool. One of the only genres, might be the only genre that you'll get that from drums or any songs, is like soul, where they, yeah, they basically stop the song and then they kind of do this little pat pat boom. I mean, it's so, I feel like you could analyze that moment over and over, because like, I mean, it could mean so much, like heartbeat, like there's so much to it, right? Trips me out. This song does it, and I really think it's cool.
Now, see, I got to go back and listen.
Got to
close for that.
Yeah. Got to, yeah.
I've heard it, but I haven't really heard.
We'll
it.
We'll pull it up now. And the other cool thing is, right after that, the strings come right back in and give it this like super dramatic feel, almost like it brings you down, and then it just lifts you right back up. Another great song with the vocals where they just really play off each other in an impressive way.
There's not a bad vocal track.
Not a bad vocal track, but this is one where they really use like, kind of, yeah, like acapella techniques, you know what
they
I mean?
Do.
Like,
it's,
I mean, obviously
it's
not
kind of layered.
Yeah, yeah, very much. They play off each other so well on this track. So we're gonna listen to a little bit of this track number 3. Who Am I? The vocals,
whew, yes,
sick, and I mean, and the instruments just play so well with the vocals on that beautiful song.
You know, that's
beautifully painful song. Yeah, so we're gonna hop down track number 4. This is, well, so it's They Call Me Mr. Lucky, but They Call Me is in parentheses, so it could just be called Mr. Lucky.
Right? Yes.
It depends. Some people would read that and just go, hey, this is track number 4.
I read it as They Call Me Mr. Lucky.
Oh, that's how I would say it too. But some people might look at it and go, track number 4, Mr. Lucky.
Yeah. Lucky.
They Call Me Mr. Lucky. This has more of that older 60s kind of,
yes,
kind of Motown feel to it. Kind of beach music. If you're from if you're from the Carolinas, the beach music triangle, this has that beach music feel to it.
Yes.
It has like a real bright, kind of lively run into the chorus, and then the chorus, like, I don't know, this is going to sound kind of cheesy, but it has like rays of like sunshine almost that come in and just like warm the song up a little bit. Like, listen to it like that. Like, right into the chorus, has this nice run to it that just kind of brightens up throughout the chorus. So. Has that old kind of early 60s
happy-go-lucky
bubblegummy kind of we're in the at the sock hop
thing. And I never thought of the beach music, but definitely has a very close resemblance.
You could shag all day to that song, man. I was shagging over here by myself.
That's shagging.
So we'll go down now to track number 5. This was another single off of the album and one of the cooler names to it.
Yeah,
probably wouldn't be a bad band name if we're just talking about it.
It's a great name.
So the name of the track is called Time to Get Down. That's a great band name.
Time to Get Down.
Time to Get Down. Hey, who are you going to see tonight? Time to Get Down. Boom. Time to Get Down. TTGD. This song, love the use of the hi-hat. It gives it like kind of this walking, this kind of like we're, kind of walking, kind of gallivanting around, you know? It has a light boogie sound, I feel like. It boogies, but it doesn't, it's not like one of those hard boogies. It has one of those nice kind of, not waltz, but a nice kind of dancey boogie to it. Love this track. So we're going to play a little bit. This was the last track on side one.
That's right.
If we're talking vinyl.
That's right,
vinyl. So
or
this,
cassette.
Or, oh, sure. Jeez Louise. All
just
right.
Saying.
So track number side five.
A.
Track number five, Time to Get Down. Time to Get Down. So what a song. We were talking during that, like, this is the definition of like 70s soul. It has a lot of elements of funk, but like a light funk kind of. It just,
it's got a little rock in there with the guitar,
a little bit of rock. You could even, we were talking about how you could do a disco version. Even this was way before disco, not way before, but this was before disco. Like, like when disco came out, they could have taken the song in a super disco-y version of Time to Get Down.
Well, and that's the thing, that a lot of that 70s funk soul, I mean, morphed into disco.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
What I like about this song is that this is a song, this is like a makeout song that's talking about making out, but it's not like the song that you would put on to make out. Which there's other ones on here that are perfect for, that are slower. And I think it's funny because, you know, it's all about like, it's time to get down, baby. Let's go. Yeah.
Literally, name of the song, Time to Get Down. One of my favorite tracks on the album. So. Let's hop down to side number 2 of the vinyl. This song is one of your favorites.
Love this song.
We played this as we were prepping for the recording, and after we listened to it once, we both were humming it the entire time.
Yes.
Track number 6 is called 992 Arguments. 992 are the numbers, so a little 992, almost like an area code. 992 Arguments. This was another single off of the album. Has kind of a Motown sound, like, feel to it. Mm-hmm. Very kind of Shaft, like Shaft-like. Yes. It's on Shaft. Yeah. It's especially at the start, has that energy to it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The hi-hat and the use of toms are awesome on this track. And the finish is one of my favorites because it just jams out.
It does.
And it is jammy, man. It is a great track. Yeah. 992 Arguments. Yeah, this one of your favorites.
Yeah, my notes on this are just love this song. This to me was like the hidden gem after listening to the whole first half of the album. They come in with 992 arguments, which everybody's been in a relationship and is at that point sometimes where they're like frustrated and like, you know, I don't want to have another argument. And just kind of how they capture that emotion in this, I love it. You know, it's like
done.
They're
well.
Like, oh, yeah, I'm they done with well. This. Yeah. I'm not having argument number 993. I've had 992 of them, and I'm done with you.
And I'm done. Love it. Love it. So let's hop down. Let's listen to a little bit. Track number 6, 992 Arguments. The piano is awesome on that too. Like it really kind of shows it off a little bit. It has a nice little moment there, a couple of moments.
Yes.
But what a strong track, 992 arguments. Again, one of the 4 singles off the album. We'll hop down track number 7 now. A little bit of a longer song title.
Yes.
Listen to the Clock on the Wall. Great, great, great track. The start has a very dramatic feel to it. Sounds almost like a musically rhythmic clock. So yes. they do a really good job of using that clock element throughout, like both with the instruments and with the vocals. Another very strong vocal track. There's the breakdown in the song is so dirty, and the drums really just make it pop, like, really well. The finish has this like fading effect to it that gives you this almost kind of like a warning, which again, that's kind of a theme throughout this album, is this warning of getting screwed over in relationships, whether yes. it be by backstabbers or whoever. This is another one of those kind of like whisper in the alley warning kind of feels.
I love this song too because it's got such a great soulful sound, and but it really is a simple song.
It is. It absolutely is. Some of the best songs are simple, man.
Yeah, they build it up. They kind of do the storytelling, and it just really comes out perfectly.
Yeah, completely agree. So let's listen to a little bit of track number 7. Listen to the Clock on the Wall.
Closer.
the clock element is so neat. And we were debating back and forth as to what is making it, making that that sound. Like, is are they plucking some strings? Is it a xylophone? I think we agreed it might be a mixture at different points of it. But man, is it not cool as the other side of the pillow, bro.
That just blew my mind. I've never really thought of it, or if I did, I forgot.
And it sounds just like,
but
like,
yeah,
like
it's a TikTok.
The
yeah.
TikTok, like the old grandfather. It was a grandfather clock?
Well, grandfathers or cuckoos. Any kind of wind up clock would kind of.
Yeah,
have
it has
that
clock, tick, clock, tick. Just, it's fascinating. It's so cool.
But that is awesome. Yeah.
Such a cool call. One of my favorite tracks on the album, if not my favorite because of that. Like, super cool. Listen to The Clock on the Wall, track number 7. We'll hop down to track number 8. So from one of my favorite songs from a sound point, like from a sound aspect, track number 7, to one of my favorite tracks from a song title
yes.
aspect. Shiftless, Shady, Jealous Kind of People is the name of track number 8. I mean, even from like a literary point of view, like that's cool, man. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of alliteration there. Shiftless,
that's street.
Shady, Jealous Kind of People. Love it. Big fan of literary devices over here at Album Swap.
That's right.
Favorite name of any track, really. Love the start. Has an organ. Kind of sounds like The Doors.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Like, and obviously these are totally different genres, even though they're about the same time.
Probably influenced, I think, a little bit, because it does have kind of like a bit of a jazzy rock sound to it more than the other tracks.
Just, that's a great point. The use of the strings here, another great great track for the strings. It has this song, and it should because of the name, but it has a shady kind of feel to it. Again, that kind of warning feel, kind of like watch out, like don't trust these people kind of thing. Obviously, a shifty, shiftless, shady, jealous kind of person. You probably wouldn't want to trust that person.
Kind of the grittiness,
sure.
Say Philly.
Great
at
point.
That
yeah.
time. Spooky sound to it. It's
for
very
sure.
kind of street real in some ways.
Absolutely. Love that. So yeah, let's listen to a little bit. Track number 8, Shiftless, Shady, Jealous Kind of People.
Shiftless, Shady, Jealous Kind of People.
Love the name, man. Love the name. Also, underrated part of that song is the guitar. Kind of has a couple of nice little screams in it and just nice little sound adding to that track. So, yeah, Shiftless, Shady, Jealous Kind of People. I just wanted to say it again. To be honest.
It is.
Yeah, so much fun. All right, so that was track number 8. Shiftless, Shady, Jealous Kind of People. Got to say it one more time.
In case you missed it.
Yeah. So we'll hop down now to track number 9, a song called Sunshine. I really like this song. This wasn't a single, but it was considered a hit of theirs.
Yeah.
It's a slow kind of standard soul song, I feel like. You know, this is a song that you're going to find a lot in the canon of soul, 70s soul. kind of slow, you know, a lot of emotion in it. Love the drums and guitar to start with. Kind of has an Elton Johnny feel when it comes to the keys on this one. A little bit. Light on the Elton John, but a little bit of Elton John spice. It just kind of like, it's one of those songs that you kind of sing to your girl, sing to your baby, you know what I mean? One of those kind of songs, like you sing it to her. You just, you know, the sunshine, it just the way that sunshine and the chorus, the lyrics, that whole part just rhythmically fits so well into this song. And we'll play it like whenever they come into the chorus and just like the word sunshine and how it all kind of like just drops in there so well. And again, another strong song for the strings, especially at the end of the chorus, just lights the song on fire. So we're going to listen to a little bit of Sunshine. Such a cool song. Song. And like you said, it's one of those R&B makeout songs, right?
It's a beautiful love song. You know, you're ready to get down with the lady.
Yeah. I just love the way that those lyrics, like, they set up with... They almost, like, run parallel with the rhythm of the instruments and everything. And, like, even the drum feel. It's just... I love it. Love the song. Sunshine. Great track. Track number 9. That brings us to our last track. Track number 10. The most famous song they did, Love Train. This was also a single off the album, shocker. I think what I thought was interesting is this whole album has this theme of, like, backstabbing, right? Like, watch your back, you know, like warnings. It's kind of, not dark, but kind of like, you know, make sure you look over your shoulder kind of thing. Like, do whatever, enjoy your life, but know that people will screw you over.
Well, be a bit guarded and don't be pathetic because... You let people, you know, kind of screw you over.
Right.
I think it's kind of coupled with that broken love, lost love. Heartache always works for the emotional appeal in any song lyric.
Right. And then I think that's what makes this last track so fascinating to me is that after all of these messages we just talked about, they finish with a song called Love Train that is so upbeat. It's just like one of the more lively tracks you'll listen to, and we'll play it out. Like we're gonna finish talking, and we'll play that.
Yeah, play it out.
It's one of the most popular songs of all time. It's one of the most iconic songs of all time. And again, the more and more I thought about that, how you had 9 tracks more or less of that message, and then you finish with Love Train, this like upbeat. We're gonna put our arms around everybody and start a love train across the globe. They don't start. It's not just Philly. It's not
That's
just
right.
America. They go That's across right. the globe.
People like, around the world.
And this is, like, after this classic soul album with licks that you've heard sampled in raps before, or you've heard it in other songs, and then other hits like Backstabbers, then you get it finishing with one of the most iconic pop songs of all time. Just killer. So we're going to listen to a little bit of the iconic song Love Train on our way out and into break, and when we come back... We're going to break some hearts.
We're going Heartbreakers. We're done with Backstabbers.
Well, now we're
going
to go Heartbreakers.
The Heartbreakers.
Ryan Adams. So yeah, so after the break. check out the full albums for each episode at albumswap.net.
And we're back with the second half of the swap.
Second half of the swap, I like that.
Second half of the swap. The heartbreaker half.
The heartbreaker half, yeah, nice. Ryan Adams.
So we got Ryan Adams, his first solo album, released in September of 2000. September 5th, to be exact. So there was a deluxe edition came out in 2016 that was mentioned to you beforehand when we were talking that it had a huge amount of music.
Like 30-something, right?
Yeah, a lot of songs. This album has 15 tracks total. Some of the tracks are pretty short. Some of them are a little bit long, and we'll kind of get into that when we break them down.
The dude can write some songs.
Yeah, he's a songwriting machine. You know, this album, I think, kind of made him or put him in that singer-songwriter category. So it kind of took him out of, like, that front man.
Breaking away from Whiskey Town.
Breaking away from Whiskey Town.
His band, Whiskey Town.
Yeah, so I guess let's start at the beginning. You know, Ryan is from Jacksonville, North Carolina, where he grew up. Moved up to Raleigh in the early 90s. He was in a band called the Patty Duke Syndrome's punk rock band. The band split up, I believe, in 94. And then he started forming Whiskey Town. He said that singing punk rock was too hard.
Interesting.
And this is at a time when alt rock was really starting to kind of bubble up. Raleigh actually had a lot of bands. They had the Backsliders, Whiskey Town, Six String Drag, Cigar Store Indians. It was actually pretty cool. There was a small festival at the brewery called the Spittlefest, which stood for Southern, I believe it was Southern Plurge into Leisure and Trailer Trash Entertainment or something.
Nice. I like it.
But they actually also got bands, say, from Texas.
Oh, cool.
Like the Derailers, if you've ever heard them. It was awesome. They had barbecue, too. So it was like $5.
Like barbecue the food, not the band?
Yeah, like okay. He catered
Van. I didn't know if that was like a band named barbecue.
Actually,
well.
Van Alston that owns Slim's.
Okay. Slim's, it's a little dive bar in Raleigh.
Yeah, he owned the Comet, which was next door, which is in a Whiskey Town song.
Okay.
On Stranger's Almanac. He mentions that. And at that time, they actually had a porch that joined the two clubs. So he was able to set out like a whole...
very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, it was cool. They've actually done it at the Poorhouse in Raleigh the past few years. And they still have a Spittlefest, I think, in March now.
Oh, very cool. Okay. I'll check that out.
Yeah, we have to go to it. I keep missing it every year. I see people like checking in on Facebook, and I was like, damn it, Spittlefest.
Yeah.
So he moved up to Raleigh. He joined up with Caitlin Carey and Skillet Gilmore and Phil Wandashear and the rest of Whiskey Town. They had a lot of success. They released an album called Stranger's Almanac in 1997, which is brilliant. And it's funny, when we exchanged this, I was actually almost thinking of giving you this album.
So that would have been wild.
Giving you Stranger's Almanac, yeah. And then Whiskey Town actually had done another album called Pneumonia, and it actually got tied up in legal troubles. And so, you know, I remember following them, because being a big fan and seeing them, I was kind of wanting to hear it, and some of the songs I'd heard. So, you know, you kind of live and you wanted to hear them.
Sure.
Finished form.
Absolutely.
While that was when you get released, he came out with this. He came out with this first album.
Heartbreaker.
This is an album I actually did buy, and I actually did listen to back when it came out.
I had it on CD.
Yeah, I have it on CD.
I wore it out, man. Yeah. I wore it out.
And I was very, you know, anxious to hear it, because I kind of wanted to hear, okay, what is it going to be post-Whiskey Town? I thought, you know, he was definitely a good songwriter with Whiskey Town.
Yeah, but what's he going to be, you know?
Yeah. What's it going to sound like, say, without this really kick-ass band backing him up? The title, actually, I think it's interesting that it came from him seeing a Mariah Carey poster.
Yeah.
he had waited till the last minute to pick out a title, and the record company exec was on the phone. He goes, like, look, you got, like, 15 seconds to give me a name. And he looks up, and he sees a Mariah Carey poster where she's wearing a T-shirt. It says Heartbreaker on it. And he goes, Heartbreaker. That's the title.
Boom.
And boom, that's it.
Gotta love stories like that.
Yeah.
Love it.
Another fun fact, my wife and I, first date, saw Whiskey Town play at the brewery.
See, Brian, I never like to cry during podcasts, and you're gonna get me all teary-eyed, man.
Well, I remember they were playing at the brewery, and I think it was right about the time that Stranger's Almanac came out. it was awesome. I mean, they jammed. They played an early show, too, so it wasn't too late. And I remember we went over to the Comet afterwards and hung out.
Nice.
Which was our normal watering hole. Whiskey Town breaks up, and Ryan basically comes out, and he does this solo album. And if you want more information about his background and his story, our local newspaper music editor, Dave Manconi, actually has written a book about him called Losering, A Story of Whiskey Town. I've not read it yet. I want to read it. Dave's fantastic. I mean, I've been reading Dave for 30 years, and he's done a fantastic job covering the local music scene here. Kind of tells you more about the story about him growing up and Patty Duke Syndrome and Whiskey Town and all that. So this album, he comes out, and it's much more stripped down. It's kind of a low key folk rock. It's got some rootsy aspect to it, bluegrass, you know, kind of undertones with banjo coming in. And the production and the arrangements are they're very like subtle and spare. Say compared to the last album where it was so full because they got that orchestra and they're really kind of layering that song. A lot of this is him on acoustic guitar, yeah, and harmonica.
Big contrast from the last album when it comes to that point. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So sure. I think from Whiskey Town, it still had some of that kind of country and blues
absolutely
to it.
Yeah,
Elton John said this kind of helped him regenerate his career.
Interesting.
Which I remember when that came out in the news, and I was like, wow, yeah, you know, that's huge.
It was like when Eric Clapton said that about Gary Clark Jr.
Yes.
Yeah, you can go back a couple episodes of Album Swap, you can listen to that one, yeah.
So this album was actually recorded in three different locations. It was recorded up in New York City at Pilot Studios. It was recorded at a studio down in Jacksonville, North Carolina, where Ryan's from. And it was also recorded at Woodland Studios in Rumaine, Nashville, Tennessee. And that's, I think, the more interesting part of the story. Because that's where he collaborates with Gillian Welch and David Rawlings.
Mm. Great musicians.
Fantastic musicians.
Banana Land.
They're in Nashville. They have a studio, and I believe they even own a honky-tonk where they play every now and then. But if you're not familiar with their name, or her name specifically, she was on the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack.
I think associate producer and played on a couple tracks too.
Yeah, she sings on some of the tracks. Fantastic talent.
Yeah, she really is.
You know, I'm a huge fan of her. So I'd have to say, before this album came out, I was finding tracks on music file sharing services of those days, the illegal ones like Napster and sure. LimeWire and such.
You're an outlaw, man.
Yeah, well, but the cool thing then was you could find some tracks of like her and Ryan on like World Cafe and these other radio shows that somebody had taped of them doing like sometimes like old Neil Young songs or Fleetwood Mac songs or kind of teaser of this new album. And it was, so that kind of whetted my appetite to hear this one when it first came out. Another interesting fact, like this was the first of 13 solo albums he would put out in an 11-year period from 2000 to 2011.
He's a machine. We said it earlier. Dude is a machine.
So three alone in 2005, and one of them a double album.
Machine. Hashtag machine.
Yeah, and so, like I was telling you, I did listen to his like first three or four albums, but then it became a bit exhausting. And at the time, you really didn't have, say, Spotify and as much readily available streaming libraries to choose from. So whether you were going to get the music legally or illegally, it was a little bit more laborious than, say, other artists.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, he put out a huge amount of music. But I like this one comment I read from Uncut in relation to the volume work he did was that this album remains a singular pinnacle in a sometimes overstretched career, unforgettable and entirely wonderful. And I do agree with that. I think
like the words used there.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was kind of called a bit of a modern day Graham Parsons.
I don't get that at all.
Yeah,
I get sure.
And definitely
not necessarily from the sound, but like a lot of like the songwriting and even the songwriting, trajectory of life. Even though we still got Ryan on the earth.
So. Yeah.
That part isn't the same, but...
Yeah. Well, and I would say with that alt-country heyday, there was a huge interest in kind of digging back into Graham Parsons and some of those artists that you didn't really know unless you're really following that genre, which was pretty slim, you know, growing up. You know, we weren't really... You knew a lot of the influence that he had, say, through the Eagles and Pure Prairie League and some of that stuff.
but for the most part, like, I didn't really know who Gram Parsons was until, like, I remember All Country came out, and I really started going back and listening to him. Like, I had heard his name.
Yeah, I love Gram Parsons. Huge Gram Parsons.
Yeah.
Flying Burrito Brothers.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Amazing.
Big fans. Big fans.
Pitchfork had the best overall comment about this album. What they said is, "Heartbreaker is the soundtrack to the last 10 minutes of any relationship you've ever watched crumble before your eyes. It's music for the ruined romantic and all of us." And I totally agree with
that. Spot on.
This is definitely an album where he kind of laments back to kind of, you know, past loves and, you know, is there still any kind of love there still? And he kind of almost borders on whiny, like if the songs are going to go on, you'd almost kind of get sick of it a little bit and tell him to shut up.
That's why there's some short songs in there.
Yeah, so I think the length of the songs kind of, it's like he can touch on it without making it too laborious. With that to be said, let's get into the tracks. So the very first track is really not a song. It's a spoken word.
Yeah. It's a 37 argument.
Yeah.
37 second argument.
This is Ryan and David Rawlings, who is one of the guitar players on the album.
Gillian Welch's husband, too.
Gillian Welch's husband. Very talented young man.
Very talented.
Talking about a song on a Morrissey album.
Right.
So we were talking earlier about why he put it on, and it's kind of irrelevant.
It's a Ryan Adams move, though, you know?
Yeah.
Ryan Adams move. Kind of off the
different.
Wall, quirky. There's a heavy feeling of quirkiness on that with that move, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Track number two really starts the music off.
Love this track.
Yeah, and ooh. So track number two, "To Be Young Is To Be Sad Is To Be High."
I was singing this song before I knew what being high was even about.
So this is a really fun, upbeat song. It's got a great twangy guitar with this modern, you know, Dylan lyrics and vocals that he brings to it. I think this song actually has more swagger than the rest of the album to a certain point.
Absolutely.
Like he really kicks it off, you know.
I was just about to say it's a great kickoff for the album.
1, 2, 1, woo! Did you wrong? Young boy done me bad. I went and did you wrong. And I got high. Lord, I got high. Now I got a bone to pick with you. And I'm sure you know it's true. Oh, one day when you're looking back, you were young and mine, you were sad. When you're young, you get sad. When you're young, you get sad. Then you get high. Oh, mate.
Young gal, you done me bad, so I went and did you wrong.
Love that. Yeah. That could be on my classic country poster right there. Great, great, great track. Love the pedal steel, that slide sound to it. Great.
Yeah.
Great track.
So
great
that's
track.
"To Be Young Is To Be Sad Is To Be High." Track number three, "My Winding Wheel." Again, very nice acoustic guitar on this. The keyboards are really great. It's kind of a bit smoky in the background. And the song really builds with each part that he keeps adding in. So it kind
Absolutely.
Of starts off acoustic, and he does this a lot in this album,
mm-hmm.
where it's just him on acoustic, and then they'll add in the organs, and then they'll add in the drums, and they'll add in the guitar, and Gillian comes in on backing vocals. And that's where I think, combined with his lyrics are really simple in some ways. They're not really long. Like I said, these songs are really kind of short. And if you look at his lyrics, minus his songs are like 5 minutes long, they're really short. They're like three paragraphs.
Oh, yeah.
He kind of builds the song up real quick and then wraps it up really nicely.
Well, nighttime let her through. Yeah, I'm talking to you. I wanna see you. Precious little thing. with their eyes that dance around without their clothes. So buy a pretty dress, wear it out tonight for anyone you think could outdo me. Oh, bed of steel, be my winding wheel, 'cause I feel just like a map without a single place to go.
Be my winding wheel, man.
Yeah, that the keyboards I just love.
I love how his they come vocals, man. Yeah. It's just like that's the kind of song you might sing like when you're in the shower or something. And you're just belting it out because you don't want anybody else to hear you because you probably stink at singing. But those moments, like "Be My Winding Wheel," oh man, let it belt, it belt.
And it's kind of the beginning of the more relationship songs, you know, love songs that he's gotten here.
Vocals sound so strong on that one.
So track 4 is Amy.
Like in all caps, Amy, right?
All caps.
Amy in all caps. So maybe it's you know, an acronym for something. I know it's not, but that was just a joke. Industry, you know, little music
inside
joke.
Inside podcast.
Inside podcast joke. Yeah, but no, Amy in all caps. So maybe you should yell it, right? Maybe that's what he's intending. Or maybe that would have been in bold. Who knows? But it is Amy in all caps. That's odd.
Yeah. This song, again, he starts off with the acoustic guitar. And then I really love the kind of vocal layering that comes in afterwards. And then the strings kind of come in here. And it really just turns out to be one of the more beautiful songs on this album. I had a question for you, like the drums in there. I didn't know if those were like timpani drums.
Well, we'll give it a listen.
Kind of come in the middle.
Yeah, well, let's give it a listen and we'll talk about it.
We'll check it out.
I don't know why I let go. I want to be your friend. Flowers grow through my window, and I love you again. Oh, I love you. Oh, when you laid me down into your beautiful garden. Flowers and the love of mine, it's God shining through to me, I guess. It's God shining through to me, I guess. Oh, I love you, Amy. Do you still love me?
So you're thinking it's mallets.
It's not a timpani, but he's probably playing with like timpani mallets, you know. And that would explain the cymbals, how it kind of comes on soft, like you don't even really hear it. But yeah, the drums, it just kind of sound, it has a muffled sound, which would kind of go in line with playing with mallets. So,
all right.
That would be my bet.
So that's track number 4, Amy.
Yeah, pretty song. Has a Beatles feel to it, a little George Harrison.
Definitely,
feel.
Yeah. Definitely, when you said that, I didn't really notice it, but definitely has a George Harrison sound on the guitar.
A couple measures of, like, Strawberry Fields on it.
A little bit of Strawberry Fields in there.
Yeah, it definitely has a little Beatles dreamy, we're skipping through a field feel to it.
So that brings us track number 5, Oh My Sweet Carolina.
What a song.
What a song. So so Emmy Lou Harris is on backing vocals on this.
Might have heard of her.
Yeah, I might have heard of her. So one of the benefits of him going to Nashville to record. So my question about this song is always, is this like his homage to his home state or how he loved it, but he does not love it anymore? And so we were kind of talking about this earlier of, if you live in North Carolina, I think there's like two attitudes towards Ryan Adams. There's some people who are just like all out fans, like it's great, they love that he's from here.
Right.
And there's some people that are like, well, yeah, you know, he's good and all that, but, you know, he really hasn't ever come back here or...
Some people don't care for him.
Yeah, some people don't care for him. Like, they feel like he's dissed North Carolina.
Right. I mean, everybody has their reasons. I think he has dissed North Carolina, but I don't hold it against him. Like, if he were to come play somewhere in North Carolina, at least close, like I would go see him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, he has not played here. That's what's weird.
I could care less of his personal reasons,
I guess
doing anything.
I think it's more weird for him putting out the volume of music. He's done a lot of tours. He's plays live frequently when his schedule has allowed it.
Right. But this was 2000. This was a while ago. I mean, he even came out with an album after this called Jacksonville City.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. And there's still, a huge amount of North Carolina influence in his songwriting and in his lyrics.
So sure.
That's why I guess it's like, to me, this is like the beginning of this kind of love-hate relationship he kind of has with North Carolina.
Interesting. It's kind of a little bookmark, maybe.
So I can attest that living here, I moved here in 1984. And that was
wasn't
Raleigh.
Even born yet, Brian.
Well, what I'm saying though is like Raleigh was pretty slow and boring. I couldn't imagine Jacksonville,
North Carolina.
Yeah,
which for anybody out there who doesn't know, Jacksonville, North Carolina is nothing more than a military.
It's a military town about half an hour from the beach.
Yeah, got to go through it to get to most of the beaches in North Carolina.
Yeah,
but it's just,
and I've got a lot of friends that grew up there, and so I go through there going to the beach, and it is what it is. So I could understand.
Wouldn't want to live in Jacksonville, North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah. Jacksonville, North Carolina is, probably a rough place to grow up.
Rather not.
So, but then he moved to Raleigh, and so then basing that off where, say, he was in the same time and social circle I was in at that time, Raleigh was a great place. Again, dramatically different than it is now because Raleigh's booming now and becoming the city of whole next century and stuff, but it's still Raleigh still had that great vibe of people. So I think that was the other reason, like when he left here, it wasn't on like good terms,
sure,
say with that creative community, as well as his former bandmates and such.
Yeah.
So that it kind of that carried it around. But I do think, I don't know, he should just like come play like a free show in Raleigh.
Yeah, in my apartment, we got room. For the podcast. Boom, there you go.
So let's listen to Oh My Sweet Carolina.
Well, I went down to Houston and I stopped in San Antonio. Well, I passed up the station for the bus. Was trying to find me something, but I wasn't sure just what. Man, I ended up with pockets full of dust. So I went on to Cleveland and I ended up insane. I bought a borrowed suit and learned to dance. And I was spending money like the way it likes to rain. Man, I ended up with pockets full of cane. Oh, my sweet Carolina, what compels me to go? Oh, my sweet disposition, may you one day carry me home.
So this song, I think, has a great country sound. And it kind of flows into this mellow chorus with Emmy Lou. And it becomes a bit hymnal.
It's beautiful, man. It is beautiful. I love it. I love the song. I sing to it. I should sing to it daily.
You should sing.
That's a daily mistake I make, is that I don't sing to that song.
And we know that since he's from North Carolina, they're referring specifically to our home state.
Oh, yeah. It's the only Carolina.
That's right. So South Carolinians, don't try to, infringe upon our song.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Back off.
That's track 5. Track 6, Bartering Lines. This is actually one of my more favorite songs, or it's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
The banjo and the kind of rustic sound he has, it's almost reminiscent of like the Dust Bowl.
Sure.
And
definitely,
survival.
You definitely get that feeling, yeah.
Yeah, the lyrics about that, like he's got to barter what he's got left, and it's either that or him and his family starve. Got that very Americana sound to
sure.
it. Kind of defined a lot of that Americana sound at that time was stuff like this that had a much more rustic sound to it.
Oh, Hold me up, hold me down, leave me in the withering pines. Steal my love, steal my kisses, take them to the bartering lines. 10 cents up, $2 down, ship it out and turn it in a few. $3 shy, leave it on the table till somebody else's money's gotta use. Spinning so hard, I can't stand. Shadow of a shadow. Treasures that she misses makes the man. 10 cents up, $2 down, ship it out and turn it in a few. $3 shy, leave it on the table till somebody else's money's gotta use.
10 cents up, $2 down, ship it out and turn it into fuel. I mean,
that is badass, bro.
Yeah, it's like it's like a movie out of like a civil or like a song out of like a Civil War.
Yeah,
movie,
for sure. You know? It definitely has that Wild West, that old shoot 'em up, bang bang kind of feel.
Yeah,
bartering lines, like it.
Bartering lines, track 7. Call Me on Your Way Back Home. Another song that's got the acoustic guitar. It's got a beautiful backing string arrangement that comes in. And it's a very mellow love song. He's got the waves in the background during the chorus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, it's a bit depressing. And I think the drums and the harmonica that kind of come in the middle of the song really pick it up. That's where I think he shows some range, because it does kind of, he's a little bit longer song and he can kind of take a little bit of time and develop it a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you love me. Call me on your way back home, dear, 'cause I miss you. Yeah, and I just wanna die without you. Oh, I just wanna die without you. Yeah, I just wanna die without you.
So that's Call Me on Your Way Back Home. Brings us to the next track, track number 8. Damn, Sam, I love a woman that rains.
Love this track, too. Fun. This is a fun track. After track 7, Call Me on Your Way Back Home, where it kind of, you know, slows it down a little bit. It slows the heart rate down a little bit. Track number 8 gets us back, stepping a little quicker.
This song really reminds me of Dylan. The guitar.
I was going to say it, but was scared as you might even call me out or something, so I was going to wait.
No,
you said it, I'm piggybacking. Yeah, I think this is strong Bob Dylan feels on this track.
This more than the other ones that he kind of has shades of Dylan. The folk sound beat, it's a really short song. I think it's the shortest other than the spoken word first track. I was wondering what you thought. Like, does he like women that are kind of like downers in this song? Or like the character likes women that are downers, you know, because like who are kind of blue and rain and, you know, that.
Interesting.
Or are they not afraid to get sad?
So. Yeah, you know what? Let's listen to it with that filter and we'll talk.
Thank you. As a man, I never been much for sunny days. I'm as calm as a fruit stand in New York, and maybe it's strange. But when the colors go out of my eyes, it's usually the change. But damn, Sam, I love a woman that rains. Clear as a bell and sound as an old engineer. Clear as a bell and sound as an old engineer. With talented breezes that blow off your hat with a sneer. As a man, I never been much for talking to.
Yeah, so I think that he is not one. I mean, like he says, he's not the sunny type, right? So I think he, you know, he likes a woman that rains. That can kind of. I mean, it's not so much. I think sometimes people think that like that not the dreary person, but someone who's not always cheery is just automatically like a stick in the mud and just a really depressing person, but it's not, you know, it's like a different level or like a different bubble to be in or a different bucket. You know what I mean? It's just a difference. And I think he just wants a woman that can get on his level as far as that dreary sadness can kind of go. It's an emotion that they wear more strongly than others.
But I mean, he says he's never been much for sunny days.
Never have.
He's as calm as a fruit stand in New York, and maybe as strange.
Yeah, I don't think fruit stands are that calm in New York.
But he's as strange as a fruit stand. Yeah. Well, I think fruit stands are calm in the sense of, like, it's fruit just sitting on a table.
Yeah, chilling.
Yeah. Anyway, that is track number 8.
Next track. Track number 9?
Track number 9, Come Pick Me Up.
Maybe my favorite on the album, man.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the stronger songs on the album.
This is one, when I was a kid, it almost becomes like your anthem. You know,
yes,
loved it when I was a kid.
So this is one of the longer songs on the album. It's a very uplifting song. The lyrics have a bit of irony in it, which I kind of like. I think the harmonica intro is great. The keyboard and drums really come in nicely. Gillian Welch, again, on backing vocals, is so spot on this song. She really rounds out his voice and breaks the album up nicely in that sense of where he's got her accompaniment on about a third of the tracks, breaks it up from him just kind of being a bit more like Dylan, where it's just him on a guitar.
Yeah, for sure. It needs that extra vocal, I think. Just like when you think about the message, like, it almost makes sense, like, come pick me up. It helps to have that second voice almost as like something to pick someone up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that second vocal is picking him up.
And then there's even some banjo comes in during the second chorus.
Love it. Love this track.
That really adds to the sound.
Telling you, love this track. Come pick me up.
When they call your name, will you walk right up with a smile on your face? We cower in fear in your favorite sweater with an old love letter. I wish you would. I wish you would come pick me up.
So this is one of your favorite tracks on the album.
It is, man. The harmonica makes it. I love, like, I remember when I was young, like a kid listening to it, and the chorus has a certain cuss word in there that is fun to say. My favorite word, if we're being honest about things, my favorite word to say. And knowing that, you know, anytime there's a song or like you read it in a book, if you could say a cuss word and slip it in with it, like because it was a song or a book or something, that was great. So I love that. And it was just a fun, there's a lot of, kind of some like pent up anger in that chorus, and I don't know, I liked it. Love that song.
as you like get older and go through relationships, you understand kind of the love hate love message in that song.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's definitely one that changes over the years.
So that's track number 9, Come Pick Me Up. Track number 10, To Be the One. This song also has great harmonica on it. One of the things I like is that it's kind of very blues, you kind of harp feel sure. to the whole thing.
Definitely is a bluesy track.
That was where he was like more Americana and less alt country.
Mm-hmm.
And why I told you like earlier that I think this album kind of really was kind of a foundation in Americana at that time.
Absolutely.
Because it had the rustic songs and the harmonica and banjo, very stripped down, like something you would hear someone play for generations on a Saturday night because there was no TV or internet or radio or anything like that.
Right, right.
The song has like a real serious tone about suicide. And the blues harp, where it kind of jumps in at the vocals, kind of punctuates that, I feel like. It's for like sure. a punch for a song that's really just acoustic guitar, vocals, and the harmonica.
Well, the pills I got, they asked me, let's go out for a while. And the knives up in the kitchen, all too dull to smile. Yeah, and the sun, it tries to warn me, boy, those wings are made of wax. While the things I do to kill me, they just tell me to relax. But oh, Cinderella, all dressed up in all your boots and all your charms, I'm not the fellow to protect you or to keep you from all your harm. And I don't know which is worse, to wake up and see the sun, or to be the one, be the one that's gone.
Fred, one of the other things you said is that this is whiskey drinking music.
It is whiskey drinking music. There are a lot of fills. A lot of fills in that last track. I had to pour a glass of whiskey for this segment.
I hear you.
So, ring-a-ling. You hear that?
Jingle.
That's the jingle of ice cubes and whiskey in a glass.
So that brings us to track number 11. Why do they leave?
And it is a question. There's a question mark there.
Yeah, why do they leave?
Why do they leave?
Why do they leave?
Hmm. Why do they leave?
I'm not sure. Maybe we'll get the answer.
Maybe we will.
So this is, I think, another great song. And I think this is where he really shines as a singer and songwriter. He deals, again, with kind of the lost love and breakup. But the blues harmonica in the middle, the acoustic and the keyboards, the acoustic guitar, the keyboards intro is just really spot on. The way he brings the keyboards in, really subtle. It's really good keyboards.
It really
without
is.
Without them yep. being kind of forefront.
Yeah.
Gillian Welch, again, on backing vocals. I mean, what's not to like?
It's hard to find something. It's hard to find something. I'm not even looking for it, but that's probably hard to find.
All right, so that's track number 11, Why Did They Leave? Simple cards and things, rose-colored sunsets, no flowers for me.
Man, All the feels, Brian. I'm telling you, this album is for the ruined romantic.
It is. It's totally. Is.
For the ruined romantic.
Yeah, you've gone through some really tragic crap, and now you're reflecting back on it and trying to get out of it in a very sorrowful way.
Absolutely. The ruined romantic. I'm telling you, man, all the feels, bro. All the feels.
So that's track number 11, Why Do They Leave? Brings us to track number 12, Shakedown on 9th Street.
This is my favorite track on
this
the
is
album.
Your favorite track?
In a couple random bands I've played in, we've covered this track because it is, man, it's not a toe tapper, it's more like a boot tapper, you know what I mean?
It's a bit rockabilly.
It's got a little rock to it.
So I have an interesting story about this song. Well, the first thing that this song reminds me of course, is Bo Diddley, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
but I didn't really realize it until I was actually seeing Phil Lesh and friends with my good buddy Joey Costanza, fan of the show, listener. Anyway, he and I are sitting there, and Phil goes into this. But at first, I'm thinking it's Bo Diddley.
Okay.
Like he's going to play Who Do You Love,
yeah,
okay. Right?
Yeah.
And so it took me a while to realize it was Shakedown on 9th Street.
Oh, very cool.
And I think this was like the summer after Phil and Ryan sat in a couple shows with Phil at Red Rocks.
Gotcha.
You know, because after Elton John was loving him, Phil had to go check him out, right?
Hey, you know. Yeah.
So I have to admit, I was like, man, that song just sounds so much like Who Do You Love during that one part. When I went back and listened to it today, it's definitely got that borrowed interest from it.
A lot of blues songs have.
Yeah, yeah. It's a straight up kind of
common elements in blues
rockabilly songs. Sound. And I think he does a really good job pulling off the vocals, like a little bit raspy. It's kind of got that like Fender Stratocaster guitar that's got that kind of twangy rockabilly sound to it.
Head on down to the street, girl. Let's go out and kick it with the boys and the gals. Wear your dress and bring my ring. Someone's gonna get it, ain't gonna be me. Lucy, Lucy, my gal. Gonna hit him, but I'm gonna kill him now. We all met about 3:30. Lucy, she was rocking by my kicking machine. Too many straights, not enough grease.
I was just gonna hit him, but I'm gonna kill him now. It's fight time, bro. It kind of reminds me the Saturday Night's Alright for Fighting by Elton John. It's not the same exact song, but I feel like the message with the way that the songs are done is it's like, yeah, you guys are going to, like, we're talking about fighting, but are Ryan Adams and Elton John going to start fights?
I would say it's a rumble.
Ooh, I like that.
With that kind of rockabilly sound.
Rumble gives it like a more like a more artistic feel. It's an artist. It's,
like
an,
a
it's an artsy 50s fight. It's a rumble.
Gang rumble.
Yeah.
That does it for the Shakedown.
Shakedown on 9th Street, track 12.
Or, as I like to call it, Hey Bo Diddley. No, I'm just kidding.
The Rumble.
The Rumble. So track number 13, Don't Ask for the Water. Another acoustic guitar intro with Ryan singing and doing a little storytelling. This I feel is another kind of nostalgic love-hate song about kind of where he came from. Some of the overtones and what he sings about. But it's a pretty good song. Kind of keeps this strong track. The blues harp, to close it out at the end, really gives a kind of a southern bluesy feel, a little bit
absolutely.
More so than the...
Yeah.
I kind of wonder back to, like, him living in Jacksonville in the 80s, growing up in Jacksonville in the 80s, and it being pretty, you know, not too awesome.
Yeah, not too awesome. That's a polite way of putting it.
I hate this old place, what it represents. And I hate who I was and who I ended up since. But if you learn how to swim, just in case you drown, don't ask her for the water, 'cause she'll swallow you down. And she's 10 miles apiece in the hardest of nights,
And her belfry's got arch, but her rooftop's all right. But down here in the sewer.
Really does a good job storytelling here.
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty song. The guitar playing is beautiful.
Yeah.
The strings that come on are really, give a nice extra kind of depth, like layer to the song.
Yeah, and I didn't really realize that until we listened to it, that it kind of has a little bit of that flat picking style to the guitar playing there. Maybe a little nod to Doc Watson and, sure, and some of the Western North Carolina
influence. He picks it. He picks it like a good old North Carolina boy would pick.
That's right.
Even though he didn't really pick, he played more. But we'll go with it.
Brings us track number 14, In My Time of Need. Fun fact about this song, the title comes from the lyric to a Gram Parsons song. Called
Another Gram Parsons reference.
Another Gram Parsons reference.
GP.
In My Hour of Darkness is the name of the Gram Parsons song. And the Absolutely. That song
I
actually...
know, I know exactly what it's talking about.
That song actually closed Grievous Angel album.
Yep.
This is the longest song in the album. It has the acoustic intro. Gillian kind of on vocals comes in. They bring the banjo. It's got that Americana, pure and simple style.
Will you comfort me in my time of need? Can you take away the pain of hurtful deeds? When we need it most, there's no rain at all. The dust just settles right there on the feet. We say to me, little rain's gonna come when the sky came off and under me. 'Cause I will come. When my days are through, and I'll let your smile just often carry me.
This has like that suffering Dust Bowl ballad aspect to it. Bit of survival, you know, the farmer's got to kind of like support his family, stay alive. So, you know, this is the song about the land, the people, the emotions. Again, this kind of ties back to that Americana aspect and getting back to what was important to people and not so much, say, all the pop culture and nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is track number 14, In My Time of Need.
A lot of fills. A lot of fills in there, man. Mm.
Brings us track number 15, Sweet Little Gal, 23rd and 1st. So
I like that little addition. That's very Ryan Adams-like. Right?
Very, yeah. Obtuse.
Yeah, obtuse. That's a great
it's
way.
Very obtuse. This song has a very nice intro. This time, instead of acoustic guitar, it's piano. The vocals here are a little bit different. He actually shows, I think, a little bit more range compared to the other tracks on the songs. It has a little bit of that hymnal sound to it with the backing vocals, kind of how he repeats the lyrics. One of the other things I thought that was interesting about not only this song but some of the other songs is that these characters, these songs, are very kind of discreetly mixed, and they're almost like very subliminal, like in this fog. You can kind of see them, but they're there, but not really there. That's where his artistic brush works really well on this album, is kind of those strokes he can paint. And
it's
he does
it. It's a really cool way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, he does it really good in Sweet Little Gal, 23rd and the 1st.
Yep. We'll play it out, right?
Yeah, so we'll play that on the way out. We'll come back with our final closing segment.
And feel where my plane sweet little girl.
All right, time to wrap it up now. We're going to give these album scores from 1 to 10. Decimal points are encouraged. Brian always goes a little overboard. Goes in the hundreds sometimes, but, you know, to each his own. We're also going to give a hashtag of, you know, kind of summing up. We can use it how we will, but it will reflect some thoughts or feelings on the album. So, Brian, you have said that you would like to go first tonight. So why don't you go ahead and lead us off? What is your score and hashtag for Ryan Adams' album, Heartbreaker?
I'm going to give it a score of 9.
Ooh, an even 9.
Even 9.
Like it. Clean.
But, my hashtag is very long, so it's love, hate, love, hate, love, hate, love, hate, dot, 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 dot.
Oh, my gosh. See, I knew that you were going to use the score, because this is the thing. You can't disagree with, like, not the genius, but how great the album is. You can't disagree with that.
It's a brilliant album.
So, right? So, because you can't disagree with that, that is reflected in the score. A 9. Super strong. I don't even know if you've gone 9. Have you gone 9 before?
I think I did.
Either way, 9 is super strong. But then you can't let the sourness just not be noticed. No, you can't. You can't let the sourness.
Songwriting.
That's fine. I don't care what the reason is. But
his songwriting. He talks about love and then hate and then love and then hate.
Oh, still. But the fact that you're going on and on. You still had to give a little jab.
No, that's got nothing to do with my personal feelings towards the artist.
Oh, you are giving me up. Nobody believes that.
I could go for the easy thing. Ruined Romantic. I mean, we've already kind of hashed that out, I feel. No pun intended.
I like the Ruined Romantic. I like the alliteration.
But, no, I think more...
And I came up with that.
No, I'll say this. As an artist, what I do like about him is he's very ironic. Like, on some of those songs where he's talking about love, but it's, like, at the same time, it's like, yeah, I love you, but I hate you. He's brilliant at doing that. He's brilliant at writing those kind of songs. And so the love-hate is not me love-hating
him. Okay, all right.
It's his kind of tone.
I believe you more than I did, but not still completely. So.
Well, I mean, not like anybody's ever going to search on a hashtag of that length anyway.
Yeah, because it's ill-advised, Brian, and you work in it.
I could go for the save thing, again, the Ruined Romantic, but I thought we were, like, being creative.
Well, I came up with Ruined Romantic, so you can't steal my idea.
I know, so there you
whatever.
Go.
All right, so my turn. I had the group was called the OJs. Album was called Backstabbers from 1972. I gave it a score of 8.7, which I love. I love the album. And, like, the more I listened to it, the higher it went. I'll be, like, whenever I first started, it was in, like, immediately it was like, the lower eighths, but every single time it, like, grew up and up, and even when we listened to it here, still, like, you notice more, and it's just, God, it's just such a damn good album. Strong recommend, 8.7, real strong score. And my hashtag... The album's called Backstabbers. The group's called the OJs. My hashtag is Oh Damn.
Clean. Oh Damn.
Oh Damn.
You heard it here first.
Because once you hear the album, it is. It's got so much cleanness, but so many levels of just straight, smooth dirt.
So is it O-D-A-M?
No. I thought about that. Nope, just O-H. We're going to sound it out. So O-H-D-A-M-N. Hashtag Oh Damn for the OJs. And there you have it. So I give the Backstabbers by the OJs an 8.7, hashtag Oh Damn.
Oh Damn.
Yeah, and you gave an even 9 to Heartbreaker by Ryan Adams and hashtag love, hate,
dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot.
Which won't work in hashtag.
Which won't work
like
in Twitter,
it.
So don't
I like
it.
It.
There we go.
Don't worry, you'll love, hate it.
Yeah, and so here we are. Episode 11.
Heartbreakers and Backstabbers.
Heartbreakers and Backstabbers. I was about to say Heartstabbers and Backbreakers. There you go. Episode 11.
It's next episode.
Next episode will be episode 12.
Episode 12.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next episode with two more albums to swap.
Keep listening. Check us out on social media and all your favorite podcast platforms. Later.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.